Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Teach Gym Show, the place to teach, to learn, to grow. Today's show is brought to you by
ClickAndRetire.com, where Teach Gym and a host of others help teachers and professionals implement their click and retire stratagem. ClickAndRetire.com.
Hi, Teach Gym here. I teach and I learn. I'm grateful to have you here on a new year. Happy New Year. The 1st of January, 2015. We're getting excited. Getting going forward here, loving the idea of learning and growing and teaching and learning. So let's get started. Just ran into an article here this last week in the industry, in the Training Industry magazine for winter 2005. And as I went through it, it was just amazing to me some of the thoughts that I had, some of the experiences we've been working with in the training industry, specifically in the last 6 months, that have tied into some of these trends that they say are going to be happening in the next year. So it's pretty exciting. So I'm going to go through and kind of introduce these 10 topics. I like what they are. I know where they're going. At the same time, I've seen them in my own life. I've seen them in my own practice and have been experiencing many of these items already. I'll reflect a little bit on the last year or two and some of these trends that we've seen then, the need that exists and the opportunities that exist for business owners, for trainers, as well as for those that are seeking growth and development into the teaching and learning arena. So with that, let's get started. First off, the article was written by Doug Howard, and I was excited by him saying that the key elements that we saw in 2014 and leading into 2015 are the fact that executives are focused not so much on how money is spent, but how it is spent relative to the value that it creates. In other words, they're looking for managing transformations. They're seeing trends in transforming organizations and looking specifically for the way that training has a positive impact on performances of a business. And so that business drive behind training in the business side of the world is really important. But it's also interesting that that ties back even to our school systems. And let me go ahead and make that transference for you. One of the key items that they talk about in terms of trends is the idea of, trying to find it here on the papers in front of me. There it is. That the workforce readiness, that they're trying to make sure that training is tied to actual jobs. I mean, we're seeing here in the state of Utah, the area technical colleges, the applied technology colleges went from applied technology, they weren't colleges, they weren't full colleges, they were associate degree colleges, now they're almost full colleges. And so we've seen that change happen here. But I have a friend who has a son who is autistic, and he was looking at what are the career paths for autistic person into actual jobs and into careers. And he said that many of the corporations are dissatisfied by the people being prepared as they come out of school systems because they're not learning the things that they need to be applying in their actual jobs when they get out as information workers, as knowledge workers. Excuse me. And so one of the trends coming is and continues to see, as I've seen in the last 2 years, 3 years, is the idea of how do we make these connections and ties between what we do in school and what leads to actual jobs and careers, and how do people come out of school prepared and ready for actual positions in companies. One of the things that we saw as we talked to some companies back a year or so ago was that some of these companies are actually building up curriculums and they're extending those curriculums down into the ATCs, the Applied Technology Colleges, and or even down into the high schools so that a person would begin a corporate training, if you will, a corporate career path, even in high school or just into the first year or two of college, that would pre-prepare them for the actual kinds of jobs and work that they would be doing in specific companies. So really a unique tie. So workforce readiness is really a big thing. And there's some other interesting ties that come into that as we look at how do we know that we have these needs? Well, corporations are saying, I can't get enough people that can program in this language or that can code in this way or that have these analytic skills or these analysis skills or that are tied to social media and have those skills that they can work in a way that they're independent and those kinds of things. So if they're looking at very specific needs, the companies can organize those. But the other part of it is they look at the data that's coming out of schools. Where are people coming from? Where are they going to? And so big data becomes part of the next solutions for large organizations because they look to extrapolate intelligence gained from the companies into the vertical markets that they're looking to hire into. So then they're able to go back and find out how they can develop people into those arenas. So workforce readiness, moving toward an actual position and a job, ties back to education, ties into careers, as well as impacts the industry of training. So there's that side of it. Big data is the other interesting one that comes out because when you start looking at learning and development, big data is a term that's used for heavy analytics that allow us to see trends in markets, to see trends in businesses, to see trends in societies, and be able to leverage and manipulate and change the marketing messages, the things that we're doing, so that the audience can be more readily prepared and handle and take care of that. My son-in-law was recently involved in a learning opportunity at a university, and they were talking about that. Big data became part of the discussion. Because the idea of because of big data, knowing that more students fail on this question in a quiz at the end of a course, and that course has 10,000 students in it, an online course nowadays can have that, we have big data, don't we? And so then small tweaks in those specific questions or those specific activities allow learners to more efficiently and more effectively go through those specific experiences. And as a result of that, they're able to push forward and learn more, grow more, and do better and perform better. And has big data underlying the learning implications for personalization is really a unique concept. And so one of the trends that we see is that big data analysis and data analysis starts to drive how corporations are using their money. So if they make sure that it impacts directly customers, that the products they're developing impact specific learner issues so that they can see exactly where the sticking points are, if you will, and move toward that operational effectiveness that they seek, that training helps to mitigate the risks of what's happening, all because of the analysis that can be taken place now through analytics. Some of that analytics might be in a learning management system. Some of that analytics comes from marketing. Some of the analytics actually comes from other areas. So providing relevant and targeted training because of big data becomes very, very useful. So corporations are going more and more in that direction. In the school system, we see some of this also. We see a lot more heavy testing, multiple choice question tests, and a lot of these tests happening multiple times through the year so we can see where a student's growth is. While a great practice in many ways, sometimes teachers feel that the testing is too much. It's intrusive, it takes too much time, and as a result of the time loss, they're actually losing instructional time. So you have this debate that we'll see played out in the school systems. And so as a parent, as an educator, as somebody concerned about the future, you might want to keep your eyes open for the use of data and testing results specifically in schools. Now, recently, there's an announcement by the governor in our state, in the state of Utah, that they were going to spend $500 million on education in the next year for the budget. Fascinating, amazing that they would come up with such a huge number and make such a push into education. Will they use big data? Will it impact testing? Will a lot of that money go to testing? I don't know. Those are some of the questions that I'll be looking to look for in the coming year. So big data is one of the things that we'll start to see more and more of, and its influence in learning and education. With that, excuse me, we start to see that because we can have exact answers, because there's a need for this development, we go down into how do we develop our learners? How do we develop employees? And some of those kinds of questions are driven by some of the changes that we see in the training industry specifically. In the area of corporate spending for training is on the increase. The conservatives, they say it's 1 to 2% as it was in 2014, but as much as 5 to 7% increase in most industry segments over in 2015. the growth in spending services was grow to exceed 5%. So that's pretty exciting about that kind of money being spent and increased into corporate training. And again, why? Because they can use data to make these expenditures and the efficiencies that they see in the training take place and more fully press forward. So increase in spending in training, just like we've mentioned for the state of Utah, increase in spending in education. Interesting, isn't it, that we've in the state of Utah have not gotten or seen this kind of an increase in 25 years. And so we'll see if it makes it through the budgetary process. But the idea that there's a need for spending, a need for individuals, think about it, are a lot more are spending more on education because of their desire to get the jobs and the careers they want. But we have some other things happening in society that sometimes aren't delivering on those jobs and careers, and so we end up with student loan debts and some other problems challenging individuals. We'll get into that in other times. But right now, corporate spending is up. It'd be interesting to see if individual spending is up for learning on the educational side. Sounds like in the state of Utah, anyway, spending is up for education. So, again, a need for our changing society, changing so quickly, so there's a need happening there. So how does training take place? What are some of the things that we do in our training to help things grow faster, smarter for people that are now going to be involved in these three big pieces that we saw, the workforce readiness picture, education to career, you know, new employee into specific career spots in a company using big data and data analysis for pulling together our people and pulling together the right kind of training for people, and the corporate spending increasing to help make sure that training takes place. So how does the training get implemented? Well, those are some of the things that happen next. There's two specific trends that are mentioned here that I think tie very much to this foundation of the corporations are spending, seeing the need for improvement, and wanting that business tie. So how do they do it? Well, one of the ways they're doing it is by outsourcing. Interesting enough, the training function in many organizations is changing, specifically the way talked about here. Corporate executive expectations for value of training increases, which is generating a renewed interest in using outside companies to drive change and quality service improvements. In fact, I'm a part of that right now. I'm working with American Express as a contractor, and as they're driving towards a new product they're releasing, they've called us in as experts to go ahead and add value to that training that they're taking place. They aren't doing it with internal people. They're having, because it's a new system, it's a new situation. So they've had some of us experts come in from the outside and do it. So we see that kind of external service providers being used to develop and deliver and manage training activities. That's a little different than we've seen in some cases, but you start to look at people are developing learning apps, e-learning apps. You have specific training packages and programs that are now online that are being bought and used in companies and corporations. So one of the trends that we anticipate, or that's anticipated by Doug Harward, the CEO of the Training Industry, Inc., and founder of the Learning Leader in the High-Tech Industry, and he's a former learning leader in the high-tech industry. Anyway, he's saying that outsourcing grows with emphasis on transformations. We're looking specifically at transformations in companies and businesses. So that's another trend to look for in 2015. And so with that, this idea that training is function is changing, there's some re-engineering going on, and as that happens, people who are experts in the field outside of companies are having opportunities to move in, both to help with large deal sizes and multiple year engagements as possibilities. So we start to see that as a trend. So those are how companies and corporations are starting to implement some of their change initiatives for transformation in their organizations. So that's a change in way that training is being looked at. So we have that side of it. The other side of it is that there's a need and an opportunity within individual learners that allows for, the formalization of informal learning. Let me kind of put that back together for you. So much of learning that can take place in some organizations is informal. Hey, Joe, I need help with this. Hey, Jim, I need help with that. Sally, can you help me with this? And so that over the counter, over the cubicle wall, come train me, just real quick, little bite-sized pieces, that's one of the trends that's out there. But the other part of that is that in terms of leadership development and organization growth and development, we push a little differently on it. And there's an effort and a trend towards some new approaches to learning and development that requires a review of not only how to support structures are put in place, but how to formalize some of this less formal learning. So in that case, some of those situations are successful mentoring and coaching are ways of enhancing and formalizing what previously was an informal process. We see that transition. So formalizing an informal process to reinforce training is one of the things that's happening in many organizations. And so this outsourcing piece in terms of development, e-learning development, some of those pieces might be taking place. But when you get down to some of the internal working through the organization, there's a mentoring coaching model. In fact, where I'm sitting right now, we're rolling out the training that we've developed. And as we are, we're having some train-the-trainer trainings that we're going through and bringing up to speed the what American Express calls learning specialists, teachers essentially, trainers, and these are the people that are going to be facilitating the learning experiences for the actual people taking the training. And as we go through that training, they are very experienced. They understand how to train and how American Express trains and the culture and the foundations and some of the knowledge they need to train. And as they do, it's an interesting place to sit as an external, contract brought in to see how they're building in this support structure. It has mentoring to it. It has coaching. In fact, we just finished building out some team lead guides, team lead help, team lead assistant tools so that we've given tools to the team leaders who will be doing some of this formal training, formal mentoring that will happen inside of the organization once the training gets rolled out. So you start to see an interesting model here, don't you? Just from my own experience. Where outsource growth and transformation in the training process, but implementation through the formalization of mentoring and coaching. So this informal team lead, instead of kind of just, going off the cuff and that kind of thing, actually having tools and techniques and structure in their hands that they can deliver and walk their people through. So a fun place to go. So now we talk about the training piece, don't we? The actual hands-on delivery, mentoring, coaching, one part of the picture there. There's some other interesting things that are happening in that arena, and let's talk about those. There's actually three I'm going to talk about further. Let's get into some techniques and tactics that trainers can use and we're seeing in the industry as being ways to help improve teaching and learning. And teachers can use some of these, and we see them happening in some of the social learning that's going on out there. As people pick up new technologies and new devices, as well as the way that they interact with each other and learn from one another. But also we're seeing it influx into the corporations and the way that corporations are dealing with and the way that trainings are being delivered. So the three are this. First off, storytelling. Second off, gaming. And third off, bite-sized learning, micro-learning to bridge little small gaps. And so those three pieces are, I call them tactics, techniques. They're strategies for delivering instruction, which is really, really useful. So let's look at storytelling first. Storytelling actually ties the training to real-world experiences, real-world situations. There's a lot of role-playing. There's a preparing those situations that they'll actually encounter. It's ironic that would be one of the trends that we're seeing in the industry, because guess what we've been doing for the last few months? Exactly. We've put together many, many role plays, many, many situations, because the training that we're developing is for a brand new situation. Because of that, we've had to construct scenarios for the learners to go through so that they can role play and model and experience this new situation that didn't exist before for American Express. You see where the learners and the designers in this instruction have come to. We recognize that having those kinds of simulated experiences will allow the learners to gain the new skills they need that are at the heart of a success story. So it improves recall, It improves retention, it enhances recall, and the learners are associating with new skills that are the heart of their actual new job. So these role plays, these preparation of scenarios that they'll encounter, are key aspects of teaching and learning when we want people to be able to apply what they're learning immediately in a new situation. In fact, we had some fun with this. We're able to actually put together simulations to simulate a new person's role in some of the technologies they'll be using as they carry out their role, and how they would make decisions, what they would do with their processes, how they would carry them out, what the order and the steps of those processes are, all important parts of changing the way that they do business in this particular role that we've been working with. So storytelling becomes a key component of it. In fact, when a couple of us were talking on Friday on the way out of the office, Wednesday, just yesterday. And as we left, we were talking about, my goodness, you know, these scenarios and stories that we've written, they've been a lot of fun. But it's interesting that we've had to kind of live this world in a different way in preparation for the training that's being delivered. So there you have it, storytelling and telling a great story, simulating real-world experiences. So this is one that I personally plan on working on, and maybe you do too, to improve your way of delivering practical information and shared experiences across your organizations. Telling the story allows people to make some of the decisions they need along that process. Well, the fun part was that the next one, gaming for reinforcement, ties in with story, or CAM. We just, as we finished the simulation for the particular, for what we're working with here, we added a gaming element to it. There were points added. There was some time constraints and some time pressure. There were points rewarded for best practices, and we reinforced those best practices in the gaming scenario. You'll get more points if you do ABC. You'll get less points if you do CBA. You start to see that there was a specific tie to actual scenarios and the way they should play out optimally as opposed to ways that they wouldn't. And thus, the gaming element comes into play. And so we built that into the simulation. So gaming mechanics for learning purposes is another way, a trend that we see that's not new. It's something we've seen for some time. But the approach is changing slightly. Creating online games and standalone learning experiences is a means of replacing the course itself. Imagine, what if the course went away and they just walked into the simulation, and through analysis and feedback they're getting from the simulation, they're able to draw out what those best practices are. If you can have a couple of summary experiences, a couple of reflective experiences around the simulation, and the simulation, by giving, again, initially very, very clean, easy scenarios and then working toward more complex and multiple-step scenarios, starts to change the way that learning can take place. Learners can actually gain new skills that they'll use on the job through what? Through playing games and simulations that are, don't have the consequences of the real world, but you can provide the feedback they need and the feedback loops they need for gaining and developing the skills and practice into play. It's fun when you can kind of do this kind of learning development. It's so full that it's tied right back to specific business processes. Trends? Sure, absolutely. But something that's hard to pull off depends on where your trainers are coming from. Depends on where your organization is. Are you willing to take that step and have your learners go through just through a game simulation and then reinforce that through multiple scenarios and different types of scenarios and allow them to generalize what the learner gains and develops through the simulation? That's a different situation, isn't it? But yet, gaming and game reinforcement is a trend we see out there, and we'll see it being used more and more efficiently and effectively as training takes and increases the likelihood of application on the job. We want to have that post-training extends right into the shelf life of the training program. Reengineering past training that was reinforcing things after the fact, these kinds of things that are happening in front. So mobile app gaming used to be used as a post-training to use gaining traction. So it is one of the ones that's gaining traction. Successful approaches in gaming is embedding experiences within the training program. So we have just embedding experiences inside the training, what we just did. So that's kind of the gaming reinforcement. So again, storytelling, gaming. And you and I both know that games that are very, very effective have a great story around them. Even Angry Birds has an interesting story around it. The story is why they're against the pigs, right? And so you have this kind of reinforcement happening between storytelling and gaming. Now, the next element that was really a fun place to be is the idea of micro-learning to bridge generational gaps. This is creating bite-sized learning objects. It's not a new concept, but how we're focusing those into small consumable learning objects. This has appealed usually to the younger generation, but now we're seeing it spread across the whole organization. Like we said, this game that you could play now is being used in simulations in other places. But bite-sized learning produces effective learning. It also doesn't drive the time clock off the wall, particularly in the terms of efficiency and effectiveness. At American Express, they have some policies about the length of web-based trainings and how short they need to be so that they are little snippets that can be consumed quickly and yet reinforce very specific types of behaviors and training that the organization wants to infuse across their learners and workers. So, micro-learning bits. In fact, I ran into an organization the other day that, interestingly enough, is repurposing corporate trainings into bite-sized little snippets so that they can be dispersed and used in multiple ways over training development systems and processes for people to grow in very small, short snippets. They bite-size the training. Interesting philosophy. The company's gaining traction. And why? Because it follows this need for micro-learning, little pieces tying these together. So storytelling, gaming, micro-learning all become strategies that we can use as instructional designers, as trainers in organizations. So as we finish up with the trends, let's go to two more. First off, customer education is converging with marketing. So it used to be that training was 100% on the back end for the company. Now, because of the marketing process most people make buying decisions from, they want to have the education up front. So instead of doing it after the market, after you've purchased training, we're now seeing training for consumers moving into the buying process. In fact, just heard of an organization in October that built training for a company that had the insight to have their marketing department fund the training, and yet the training was built for external facing so the customers could use it in research, but also it was a tool that was used internally for the customer salespeople to come up to speed on the new product before it launched. Interesting, isn't it? Single product, facing two ways, one for internal people getting trained on the product, services they needed as a new product's coming to launch, and two, for consumers as they pre-sell themselves and buy or make buying decisions about functions and features that the product has. So that is the idea that customer education now is converging with marketing, and so training is going that direction. So when you start talking about budgets, marketing budgets now could possibly be used for training to help improve and enhance through informational videos, through apps, some of these kinds of due diligence exercises that customers want to do can now be used for training of internal people as well as customers. Great way to leverage and making good decisions as they are purchased, as people are making these buying decisions. So servicing attributes are reinforced. And customers learn about products, and as they do, they're doing it through using mobile apps and games and gaming tools. So that's the consumer education converging with marketing. So all of these converge together. And the 10th one that was brought up in the trends was the idea that the job market for training professionals is up. That's right. The skill sets that are required, one of the skill sets particularly that's overlooked in training is business development professionals and strong training background. Also the idea of instructional designers that have web development ideas and web development skills. So instructional training, instructional design, this is a fun area to live and work. This is what I do. Have a great time with it. And so over the next few weeks, we'll be looking at some of these trends more carefully and see how they come out in 2015. I wish you the best of a great new year. I hope that things are going well for you and that as you go about learning in your organization, as you go about training in your organization to get those business improvement improvement processes implemented, that you'll take a look at these trends and put them into play. With that, whatever you do, don't think about elephants, educators, or entrepreneurs. Have a great day.
We hope you enjoyed the Teach Gym Show, the place to teach, to learn, to grow.